Welcome to the first part of a hopefully three-part series on Hilchas Tefillah, more specifically on Shmona Esrei. Before we talk about Shmona Esrei per se, we'll talk about Tefillah in general, and then we'll get to Shmona Esrei in specific. I heard a beautiful thought that I've seen numerous times since then. You might have heard it, and if you've heard it, then I'm sure you'll agree with me that it's a beautiful thought to start when you talk about Tefillah with this thought. The onesh of the nachash was al gechoncha teleich v'afar tochal. You have to eat dirt. So I guess dirt doesn't taste so delicious. In that sense, I hear the klala, but at the same time, dirt is as available, as ready, as plentiful as anything could ever be. So in essence, his klala was in fact his bracha, because the klala is that you're going to have food wherever you go, whenever you want, all that you want. So what kind of klala is that? So before I get to the answer, I'll tell you a story that I heard in the name of Rabbi, I think I might have heard it from him on a tape, Rabbi Leff, who is now from Moshav Matityahu, but previously was a rabbi of Young Israel, something or other in Florida. I don't remember which part of Florida. And he told me that he got a phone call from a public school teacher who was either a congregant or who knew of him, that he had, that public school teacher has a student who somewhere in the upper part of high school who is incredibly depressed and dangerously depressed, if you understand what I'm saying. So Rabbi Leff said, I'm happy to meet with this young man. The teacher introduces the young man to Rabbi Leff, steps out, and the young man tells his story to Rabbi Leff. Basically, he's living with his father, I believe, and his father said, here's a credit card. And his father said, I bought you a car. His father said, I bought you a bachelor pad. Here are the keys. Do me a favor. Please don't call me. He was going out with a woman who wasn't interested in having children around, even older children. So here's everything you need. Credit card has a line of credit that will suffice. And Hatzlacha Rabba, stay away. That was the story of Maaseh Shai, apparently. And before I tell you the answer to the question, which you might have already intuited in terms of the Nachash, I'll share with you in Gemara and Yoma. The Gemara asks a weird question, which you could already figure out the answer. How come the man fell every day? Wouldn't it be more convenient on Hashem's part to send down the man once a year? You know, talk about economies of scale. Some of you are working, you know, companies are trying to, you know, streamline processes. So economies of scale, send down the man once a year. Why every day? Says the Gemara. Emshal lachem mashal. I'll give you a mashal. This is the Gemara speaking. What is this like? Why is it? Why did Hashem send man down each day? It's just like a melech basar v'adam who has one young son. And he gives him his mizonos pam achas b'shana, once a year. And the son only greeted his father pam achas b'shana. So the father realizes that this model isn't working because the son is only showing up once a year to get the food. So the father, who wants to see the son a little bit more often, says, I have an idea. I'll give you food whenever you come and say hello to me. All of a sudden, the sun starts coming every day. So if you think back to camp and used to write, let's say, your grandmother or an aunt a letter, and she would write back and have a $5 bill in that envelope. I don't know if it ever happened to you, but you can imagine that kind of situation. So if you see that it worked the first time, you'll do it again. And all of a sudden, your aunt who wants to get more letters, or your grandmother wants to get more letters, will be getting more letters. That's the model that the Gemara says. So to B'nai Yisrael, says the Gemara in Yom HaDaf, Ayin Vav Amud Aleph. Okay, I'm sorry. So therefore, Hashem gave us each day, so each day we should once again beseech, come before Hashem and ask Hashem to give us what we need. Obviously, the lesson is clear in terms of the question with the Nachash. What was the curse of the Nachash? The curse was, you know, here's your food, good luck, goodbye, that's all between us. As opposed to Adam, we have to work hard and food is not available, it's not always easy to come by, that requires us, it forces us to come before Hashem. So in a certain sense, that concept answers a very fundamental question about, you know, our lives in general. Why do we need stuff? Why didn't Hashem give me what I need? Why didn't Hashem provide us with all the food that we need, all the other things that we need? Obviously, there's a lot to that question, but ultimately, Hashem does want us to be able to reach out towards Him. If we had everything that we need, we wouldn't have that impetus, that motivation to reach out towards Him. And therefore, we need tefillah to get what we need. Obviously, tefillah is not just a tool, it's not just a hammer or a, you know, if you, any of you are OTs, you know about those, you squeeze it and it like reaches 3 feet and picks the thing. What, a reacher? A reacher, there's not, that's the technical term. Nothing more like, okay, a reacher, you know, tefillah is not just the thing that helps you get what you need off the top shelf or off the floor. Tefillah is much more than that. It's the basis of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but ultimately it does enable us to get what we need. Much of Shmoneh Esrei is learned from Chana. I'm sure in your experiences in various shiurim on tefillah you've heard bits. I want to share with you the Gemara that learns about 7 or 8 halachos from Chana, and these again will not, you know, we'll talk about it now, we will not come back to them, but they'll sort of give be bits and pieces that will put a lot of the other halachos of tefillah in context, because we do learn much of Hilchas Shmoneh Esrei from Chana, Shmoneh Esrei specifically. And this is a Gemara that appears, Brachas Def Lamed Aleph 31a, Amr Rav Hamnuna. There are so many halachas, says Rav Hamnuna, that we learn out from Chana. First of all, Pasuk says, when Chana is davening for a child, Chana hi medaberes al liba. She's talking on her heart. So from there, we see that you need, most simply, kavana. It has to be with the heart. Continues the Pasuk, Rak sifaseha na'os. Eli is watching this crazy woman in his eyes, mumbling or uttering things with her mouth, but he doesn't hear any sound. From that we learn, from here we see that a person who's davening has to articulate the words with their mouth. This is something that's very important. If you ever see small children, like 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old, davening, and they're trying, I remember when I was in like second and third grade, we would try to see who could finish one essay most quickly. So like, of course we never said any of the words, but we just pretended we were reading and we flipped pages more quickly than the person to our right and to our left. So that obviously, based on this Gemara, is not sufficient. You have to actually be able to cut the words with your mouth. That's the language of the Gemara. You have to enunciate it with your lips. Interestingly enough, once you're doing that, so you should speak out loud, right? No, because the pasuk by Chana continues and says, "Vikola lo yishama." Her voice was not heard. Says the Gemara, "Asur." Not just that you don't have to speak it out loud, but it is asur, it's prohibited to raise your voice. Why would that be? Why should it be asur to raise your voice during tefillah? It doesn't mean to scream, even to speak out loud. What do you say? It's private. What about the things that we all say? We're all saying Atachon in Ladam Das. You, me, she, everybody. So how private could it be? But we're all saying the same exact words. You're right. The personal tefillas, I hear that. The personal things that we add into Shema Kalein, I hear that. What about the things that everyone says, you know, commonly? What would be wrong with saying it out loud? Why is it usher? Say, you don't have to. I hear that. You don't have to. But why is it usher? What do you say? Any ideas? No ideas? Okay, something to think about. Next week you'll tell me why you think it might be usher to stop it out loud. Next point in the story with Eli and Chana. Again, he sees this crazy woman who's talking without making any sounds. He assumes that she's a shikora. She's drunk, and we all know the medrash, shikora, kshera. Well, what's the problem with her being a shikora? Why is that? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with assuming that she's a shikora? Ah, the Gemara deduces it must be that you're not allowed to daven when you're shikor. This is, of course, halachah l'maaseh on Purim for some of us. A person has to be at a relative state of sobriety in order to be able to daven. What's the state? How well How articulate does a person have to be able to daven mincha on Purim afternoon? Or Maariv? What's the measure? What's the gauge? Anyone know? Elishava, no? No, that's how drunk you have to get. After you did that, I want to know now, can I daven? good idea. No, it's not if you can read the words, necessarily. Especially, keep in mind that the idea of using a sitter is not so old. It's relatively recent, because in the olden days, sitters were too expensive, so most people daven by heart. So how sober do you have to be? Anyone? No? Shulchan Aruch says you have to be able to be omed lefnei hamelech. If you could stand and sufficiently be able to speak to a king and be appropriate enough to be able to speak to a king, that's fine. So you could be a little bit, you know, just mildly tipsy, but not next time you go to a Purim Seuda and you hear somebody saying, hearing the words, omed lefnei hamelech, you know what they're speaking about. Okay, the Gemara continues. And by the way, nothing to do with tefillah, but the Gemara there has a fascinating halacha that's halacha lemaisa for everybody. Did it ever happen to you that you... it happened to me this week. What happened? I don't remember if it was one of my students or one of my children. I assumed somebody did something wrong. And I realized that I was mistaken. They hadn't done anything wrong. So after that happened and I realized that it was my mistake, not their mistake, I said, "Ah, choshe b'ksherim, I have to give you a bracha." That's sourced in the same exact list of halachos. Eli assumed Chana was doing something wrong by davening as a shikr, or whatever she was doing, and therefore when he realized that he did something wrong, he gave her a bracha, whatever the bracha was. From there, the Gemara learns out that whenever you're choshe b'ksherim, it's not only enough that you have to apologize, but you have to actually give the person a bracha, as we learn from Eli. So that you could think about how it happens relatively often. I mean, keep your eyes open this week to see how many times you're choshed somebody for doing something wrong or not assuming that they were supposed to do what they really did and they just didn't realize. So if it happens, you say, "Oh, I was choshed in you, I have to give you a bracha." Very, very important. The final halacha that I want to show from this Gemara, I'm just quoting the Gemara in Brachas, paraphrasing the words. When Chana complains to Eli that you're not fair, you're misinterpreting on who I am and what I'm doing, I'm a bitter woman, I'm sad, she says, without going into what she says, the Gemara learns out from her conversation with Eli that a person is not allowed to walk within four amos of another Jew while they're davening, because the Shechina is nitzav in that place where the person is davening. Now, this is very important to keep in mind, because, now, I don't know what the din is with a katan or a katana, but if there is a bar bas mitzvah, you assume there's nothing incorrect, they're not especially righteous, they're not big tzaddikim or tzidkanios, just a regular, seventh grade girl, one of 32 in your class where you're an assistant teacher in, and they're davening Shemona Esrei, you can't walk in front of them within the Dalet Amos because the Shechina is sitting there. The Shechina is standing. There's a story with Rav Moshe Feinstein. I don't remember what the details were, but that as he was, I think he was, he had davening had finished and he was about to leave the Beis Medrash, and he got to a point where he was like going, either leaving or about to reach for a sefer, and he saw a person there, so just person who, the way the story is told over, I wasn't there, but that like in Ramosha's eyes, it was like there was a wall there, a halachic wall. I just couldn't, nothing to do, I don't need to. So obviously if there are significant needs that a person has to go to pass by, that I don't know, I didn't really look into the sugya, but that's the final halacha that we learn from this story with Chana. Yes, question. Excellent question. That's a very complicated question. Is it only in front, is it in back also? There's actually another source where we know this idea of not being near a person who's davening, not breaking their, let's say, their airspace. So here, the one that I told you is actually more clearly articulated, I think, in the Zohar, that the Shekhinah is Nitzav, where a person is davening. There's another more simple explanation, is that it breaks your concentration. If I'm davening and my eyes are a little open or I'm looking down at my sitter, somebody cuts in front of me, so it's going to break my concentration. So I have no right to break their concentration. So that's going to be the difference between the two possible reasons. If it's because you don't want to break their concentration, so most of us only have eyes in front of our heads, not in the back of our heads, so only if you cut in front is it going to be a problem. But behind the person, it's no problem. If, however, we say that the Shekhinah is there, then it could be that the area of Kedusha that surrounds the person, that envelops the person, might be in all directions. So it's actually complicated. It is, and the Shulchan Aruch does talk about it. I don't remember the details. But it is an excellent question. Any question about these things we learned from Chana? Fine. Next point. Who knows where we get the halacha that you have to face Yerushalayim when you daven? We all know the halacha. Who knows where it comes from? Somebody's got to know. Face Yerushalayim? Anybody? Where does it come from? Shoshana, help me. We daven in the Beis HaMikdash, so when I'm in the Beis HaMikdash, I'll daven. Why do I have to daven towards the Beis HaMikdash? You're right. According to you, that would be the halacha after Churban Beis HaMikdash. So I have a pasuk even before Churban Beis HaMikdash. Elana? Any guesses? It's an explicit pasuk that teaches us that we have to face Yerushalayim. That was said by Shlomo HaMelech when he... Please. When he wanted. This is a parak that you should all look up. Write it down. Just write down this parak. Melachim Aleph Parak Ches. It's one of the most beautiful parakim in all of Tanakh. It's easy to read. It's not poetry. Shlomo HaMelech inaugurates the Beis HaMikdash. He builds the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, Hashem. And there are a bunch of halachas that we see from this. He says, Hashem, I'm building the Beis HaMikdash. And I want you to hopefully, of course, dwell in the Beis HaMikdash. And he says some very unusual things. I'll share two things with you. The first thing is what I asked you. There he says that people will daven. I'll just read a pasuk to you. There are a few pasukim that say this, but I'll read the one that's clearest. That there's going to be a time, says Shlomo HaMelech, that all of Bnei Yisrael will be scattered all over the place, all over the world, and they'll do tshuva. V'shavu ilecha b'chol levavam, v'chol nafsham, be'eretz oyveihem, wherever they're captive in the lands of their enemies. V'hispalu ilecha, and they'll daven to you, listen to these words, derech artzam, through their lands, that derech artzam, through the land of Eretz Yisrael that you gave to us, and the city that you chose, and the bayis asher banisi lishmecha. Their tefillos will go through the land that you gave Bnei Yisrael, through the city that you chose for yourself, through this house that I built for you. So what do we learn? We learn all the halacha. When you're in Chutz Laaretz, you have to daven towards Eretz Yisrael. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, you have to face Yerushalayim. When you're in Yerushalayim, you have to face the Beis HaMikdash. So what direction do you face when you're in Eilat? Where do you daven? North. What direction do you face when you're in Haifa? South. What direction do you face when you're in Tel Aviv? East. Northeast-ish. What happens if you're on the beach at Yam HaMelech? Westish. Northwestish. Now the other interesting halacha, again, nothing to do with Hilchos Tefillah per se, at least for us. Does Shlomo HaMelech ask that Hashem listen to our tefillos? Shlomo HaMelech asks that Hashem listen to the tefillos of the Goyim, not necessarily us. Why does Shlomo HaMelech ask Hashem to always listen and fulfill the tefillos of the Goyim that they daven at the Beis HaMikdash? Does everyone remember what President Obama's kvittel was 4 years ago when he first became president and he went to the, or right before he became president, I don't remember if it was right after or before, during the presidential race he went to Israel or soon after, talked about that he should be humble or he should have the humility or something like that. So says Shlomo HaMelech, V'gam el hanachri, that is not Me'amcha Yisrael and comes from an Eretz Recholka to the Beis HaMikdash, because they hear how great you are, V'his Palel HaBayis HaZen Aldam to the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem Tishma HaShamayim Va'asisa, listen to this. What should you do, Hashem? Kechol Asher Yikra Elecha HaNachri. Whatever the non-Jew asks when he comes to daven in the Beis HaMikdash, please do for him. Why? What? That's more than political correctness. This is affirmative action. Right? It's not to peace means everyone has to be equal. This is like just the guy, not even the Jews. I hear that. So it's still affirmative action. So he says very simply, Leman yedun kol amei haaretz es shimcha, so that the whole world should know who you are, should fear you, and should know that there's a Hashem, there's a Shechin in the Beis HaMikdash. What he doesn't say is the other half, that we already know, we already really realize, and we're already the Jewish people who are ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, even if we don't get what we want, we still, you know, we might have a hard time, but ultimately we still trust in Hashem. The Goyim, they get it, they'll appreciate it. If they don't get it, they'll just assume it's not there. So that's Shlomo HaMelech's tefillah. Anyway, that's the second, after, so we did tefillah Chana, we learned all those halachas. Facing Yerushalayim is from a psukim by Shlomo HaMelech. I want to share you a very interesting perspective that the Kuzari talks about, talking about three tefillahs a day. I'll tell you the words that I sort of, I picked a few words to sort of name the idea, and then I'll tell you what he says. The Kuzari talks about Shmona Esrei, and in English I would call it, or in the Kuzari's words, of Yehuda Levi, Shmona Esrei is a spa for the neshama. A spa, S-P-A, I'll tell you why. He says that in the same way we have a body. So what happens, you have a body, you eat. After you eat, you have energy, and you feel good, and it stays with you for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours later it starts to dwindle. 5 hours later, you're a little bit, you know, starting to get grumpy. 6 hours later, you're starting to get hungry. 7 hours later, you're really uncomfortable. 8 hours later, you're just bitter and sarcastic and critical to everybody around you. And then you eat food again, and everything's wonderful again. Well, says the Kuzari, that's exactly what happens with our neshama. Our neshama gets its source, its ruchnius, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It plugs into the, you know, to the outlet, connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what happens during Shemona Esrei, during davening. And then you have a full battery, little by little, as the day goes, and especially if, the way he says, if a person hears things that are not appropriate for Jewish ears to hear, and other things that might degrade the purity of the neshama, so the battery starts depleting little bit by little bit by little bit by little bit by little bit, until it's going on, it's running on empty. So comes the next tefillah and reinvigorates, resuscitates, replenishes the power that the neshama needs to function properly and healthfully. So I think that's on my. I just translate that. It's a spa for the soul. Our neshama needs tefillah every day. It's a pick me up. And then in that context, it's not related to tefillah, but he says that in the same way, every day, a few times a day, you need that little pick me up. So too, every month, you need a little pick me up. Your neshama needs a little pick me up. So Shabbos again, Shabbos also resuscitates the soul. Every month, you need refreshingness for your soul. So Rosh Chodesh is the chaper al chataseinu. Again, cleanses the soul, and then Yom Kippur. So that we have this like, it's sort of like checking your oil. You do an oil check every few months, and every broader than that, you check your transmission fluid also, and every longer than that, you check your brake fluid. So every time, you know, think of your neshama as something that needs tending to no less than any physical entity. Okay, so that is the concept of davening three times a day. Of course, davening three times a day is midah. Midah, two choices. Midah. Davening three times a day is midah. Midah raisa. Let's back up. Davening is midah. What? Sorry. Davening is daraisa. Learned out from the pasuk. What? The Gemara says that Yitzchak was mitzaken mincha, yes. What is that? Where does it tell me that there's a mitzvah for me to... In fact, even Gid Hanasha is not usur because of what happened to Yaakov. And even Bris Mila is not obligatory on Jews because of what happened to Avraham. They were all commanded after Matan Torah. So what happened to the Avos, certainly, of course, Masa Avos Siman Labanim, but they don't obligate us. Psukim after Matan Torah obligate us to fulfill. What's the pasuk that says that we have to keep, that we have to daven? You all know it. It starts Vav Ayin. Vadata es Hashem Elokecha. No? V'chal v'avcha v'chal nafshka. Don't we say it in Shema? Vavata es Hashem Elokecha v'chal v'avcha v'chal nafshka. So, Ezu hi avoda shi b'lev. What's avoda b'lev? That's tefillah. That is midaraisa. Midaraisa, a person has to daven once a day. That's for men or women? Women. Women are not men? Yeah, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to daven every day. Midaraisa, mitzvah according to at least the Rambam. The Ramban, I think, understands that that's not what the pasuk means. It means serve God with all your heart. It doesn't say tefillah there. It means serve God. So at least according to the Rambam, there's a mitzvah say from the Torah for all people, men, women, to daven every day. Come the Rabbanim later on in history and say, let's set three different times, Shachris, Mincha, Maariv, but that's only Midrabbanim. So, Midoraisa, daven once a day, Midrabbanim, three times a day. There's a halacha regarding the beginning of Shemona Esrei called being somech, meaning making adjacent or juxtaposing, geula litfila. You have to juxtapose Baruch Atah Hashem Ga'al Yisrael immediately next to Hashem Sasai Tiftach and Shemona Esrei. Question is why? So, Rashi, in the Gemara in Brachos Daf Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Dalet Amud Beis is where the Gemara says that you have to put Gaal Yisrael right next to Shemona Esrei. Now, are you allowed to say Baruch Hu in between? Let's say you hear somebody saying the Chazan says Baruch Hu. Are you allowed to reply? What about Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh? What do you say? You said Baruch Hashem Gaal Yisrael. You're about to start Shemona Esrei, and the Chazan, you came late, and the Chazan is saying Kedusha. Could you answer Kadosh, Kadosh? You can't answer anything at all. Not even Kadosh, Kadosh. Not Baruch Hu. Not Amin Yehishmei Rabba. Nothing at all. That's a good question. I don't know the answer. You're saying, do you pause for a moment, or do you just start Shemona Esrei and ignore what you hear? That's a great question. I don't know. I have to check that out. I'm not sure. So what's the reason? The Gemara gives the Yerushalmi. Rashi cites the Yerushalmi, who explains that why do we, and again, it's not going to be so simple to understand it even with his example, but I'll tell you the example then and we'll try to understand hopefully more clearly afterwards. You know what it's like to be somech geula tefila? You have a person who loves the king, a lover of the king, a dear friend of the king, who knocks on the king's door. I'm just translating the Yerushalmi as I go. The king opens up the door, and lo and behold, no one's there. The fellow who knocked on his door, his dear friend, walked away. So what does the king do? He also walks away. Shuts the door and goes back to whatever he was doing. What's the point? The point is that during all of Pesukei Dezimra, we praise Hashem. We come closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to Hashem. And in that context of being close to Hashem, what should be the next thing is that, okay, let's knock on, now that we're so close, I walked all the way up to the front gate. Now let me knock and get what I need, or interact most directly. Talk to Hashem through Shemona Esrei. And then all of a sudden I stop to say Baruch Hu, or I stop to say Kedusha, or I stop to say hi to the lady who just came in who I haven't seen in 3 weeks. So Hashem was at the door waiting for you to, he was right there. You just got so close to him, he's right there. And you sort of turned away to do whatever you're doing. So what is he going to do? He'll also turn away. I think there's a little bit of a deeper idea, which is as follows. What's Geula? Brachat Hashem Ga'al Yisrael. We're talking about that Hashem redeemed Bnei Yisrael. Where did He redeem us? From Mitzrayim. It's specifically talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim, which if you see the bracha before Shemona Esrei, it does talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So, we want the remembering Gulas Mitzrayim to be adjacent to Shemona Esrei. Why? Because if you think of the whole purpose of davening, which is going to be to ask for the things that you need, what's the best context to ask for something? Let's say you want to take July 4th weekend is coming, right? And you want to fly home to Los Angeles. Both of you next to each other. Los Angeles, two Los Angelinos. So you want to fly to Los Angeles. So you tell your boss, you know, I know it's in your hands, whatever you say I'm going to have to listen to. Is it okay if I leave 2 days early to take an extended July 4th weekend? Now, part of you asking your boss that question is realizing that it's completely your boss's call. If they let you, you go. If they don't let you, you don't go. What is Gal Yisrael doing? Gal Yisrael is doing that there was a time in history that we were in absolute danger and there was no way we could have been saved. We had Mitzrayim behind us. We had Yamsif in front of us. We were doomed. No way out. And what happened? You saved us. Out of nowhere. No way to... it couldn't have happened. It didn't make sense anyway. All of a sudden, complete salvation, perfect victory, they're dead, we're alive, we have all of their wealth. Out of nowhere. That's the context that I have to start from an Esri. And realizing, and this is the point, I'm about to speak to the person who can take care of all my problems. The being. I can speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu who has the ability to take care of anything, who has in the past shown that He cares us and loves us and has done stuff for us, and He's the only one who can provide us with what we need. So now I'm ready to start Shemona Esrei. When I say Gal Yisrael, I'm saying all that. Gal Yisrael, I'm saying you were the one who took care of us in the past. You're the one who saved us when there was no, everything was bleak and terrible, and you took care of us. You're the one who can. You're the one who did. So I'm going to now ask you for my laundry list of all the things that I need, you know, so that we can continue this wonderful relationship of you taking care of me. Now, by the way, what's the difference between Gal Yisrael before Shemona Esrei and one of the 19 brachas of Shemona Esrei, Baruch Ata Hashem, Goel Yisrael? Is it the same bracha or is it a different bracha? That is correct. What's the difference between past and present? Correct. That Gal Yisrael before Shemona Esrei is saying that Hashem, you thank you for taking us out of Mitzrayim in the past. And Gal Yisrael is, please help us with all of our issues now. Right, all the things that we need to be redeemed, yeah, that's perfect. All the things that we need to be redeemed, call it the Iran crisis, whatever personal crisis we have. So that's Goel Yisrael. Right now, Hashem, you are the redeemer of us now. And that's a different bracha. That's correct. Thank you. Okay. We talked about where Shemona Esrei comes from. We talked about Gal Yisrael. Now we're actually up to Hashem Sosai Tiftach. Where does this pasuk come from? So I just discovered something today, which I'm happy to share with you. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. What? Yeah. Sorry? Yeah. But look at the pasuk right after it. Or next time you look at the Tehillim, open up the pasuk right after it. Hashem Sosai Tiftach V'yagid Hilal Secha. And the next pasuk says that we don't have the ability to bring korbanos. Or Hashem doesn't want just korbanos, He wants, you know, a good heart, etc. So I saw explained very beautifully that the reason why we add that pasuk, Hashem Sosai Tiftach, is because now that we don't have the korbanos that we once had, what's our way to fill that place of korbanos? And Shama Parim Saseinu. Then place of the parim, the cows of the korbanos, we have to use our mouths, our tefillos. So what pasuk do we say? We take the pasuk that says right where David HaMelech, Tehillim Perek Nun Aleph, 51. Hashem says, David HaMelech says that I'm not interested, that you're not interested in just, you know, korbanos that are lacking what they should be having and we're not able to bring korbanos. The pasuk right before that says Hashem Sosai Tiftach. So we are usurping David HaMelech's pasuk, Hashem Sosai Tiftach, as if to say, We can't bring the korbanos that we want to bring. Really, we'd love to bring korbanos. We wouldn't have to, I don't know if we'd have the same Shmona Esrei. We wouldn't have the same Shmona Esrei, right? But we wouldn't Shmona Esrei wouldn't have to be as a focal point as if we had the korbanos. We don't have that. So in the place of that, Hashem says, "I tiftach if you get to lasecha." Let my, you know, like nowadays they don't use this advertisement, but it used to be that the yellow pages had an advertisement: "Let your fingers do the walking." We just turn the pages to get to the right phone number. Nowadays, no one uses books other than to, like, prop small children up so they could reach dining room tables. We use superpages.com or anywho or any of the others. So let our words do the sacrificing. Let our fingers do the working. Okay, I want to talk. Before we get to the real history, excuse me, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh B'Dvarav. Thank you. This will not be exhaustive in any which way, but I want to talk about a few points of the advantage of Tefillah B'Tzibur. Understandably, women are not obligated in Tefillah B'Tzibur, but the concept of Tefillah B'Tzibur is nevertheless significant. And Tefillah B'Tzibur has two components. A, being with a minyan. And B, the fact that we all say the same words. It's not really called Tefillah B'Tzibur in a halachic sense, but ultimately we are saying all the same words as one another, which a lot of people find, especially people who are new to religiosity, sometimes find it frustrating. In terms of expressing who they are, their own individuality, what they want, and I think we all share the frustration of not being able to connect so easily to a number of brachas, especially in the latter half of Shemona Esther, that we don't really feel relate to us. So where does this idea of Tefillah B'Tzibur come? Again, with both components. And this is not exhaustive in any which way. I just want to share two or three ideas that the Khuzari himself relates to in terms of Tefillah B'Tzibur. The Khuzari writes, this is in Shar Gimel, number 19, 18 and 19. He says that sometimes if I would daven for myself or by myself, what would the content of my tefillah be? It might be that I'd be davening for all the good things for myself, which is great, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes when I daven for me to, let's talk about the following example. Hashem, I want to get into Columbia School of Law, and I know that they only accept 184 applicants each year, 284 applicants each year. So please let me be one of those 284 applicants. So let's say Hashem listens to me and I get into Columbia Law. What does that by definition mean? What? That there's somebody else who is not getting into Columbia Law. That's the danger of a tefillas yachid. When you daven as an individual, so very, not always, doesn't have to be like this, but there are circumstances that what is beneficial to one person is detrimental to a different person. And Chazal do not want tefillah to work like that. Hashem will more answer tefillos and will more quickly and fully answer tefillos when the tefillos are presented in a way that there is no downside for anybody. So therefore they created a unified tefillah, both in terms of text and davening together, that there shouldn't be this downside for individuals at the expense of other individuals. That's one point. Another point that he points out, again, there are lots of ideas in terms of tefillah B'Tzibur, I'm just sharing, just telling you what's in this little section in Khuzari that you might not have heard or come across otherwise. He says that tefillah should be with a minyan because what some people lack, other people have. It's sort of, we all complement each other. When you're davening on your own, it's you, as worthy or, God forbid, as unworthy as the individual is. As opposed to Masha'in came, when a person's davening as part of a tzibur, so then the tzibur is a unified tefillah, but some people excel at this in the same areas that other people are weak at. Other people are excelling in other areas that the first people were weak. You know, we all have our own strengths and weaknesses, and we all complement each other. And if we take a whole tzibur together, so hopefully all the things, or many of the things that are some lack, other people have, and together this unified tefillah will be a tefillah shalema when it reaches HaKadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol, and of course be a more effective tefillah. The final idea, again, many ideas, just what the Kuzari writes in this small section in paragraph 19 of Mamar Gimel, is he gives a mashal. He says, let's say you want to have a really, really safe, you want to live safely. You want to be very safe. You have very expensive oil paintings that you inherited from your great-grandfather, worth millions. So you're gonna set for yourself a large wall around your building, around your house. You're going to have a closed-circuit TV getting every angle, every of the perimeter of your property. You're going to have a sophisticated motion detector in every room. You're going to have alarms on every window. You're going to have padlocks on your door. And because you're so confident, you decide you don't want to have your share in defense taxes. What I need to help pay for an army and a navy and an air force, but I have such good protection for myself. Or in the Kuzari's words, you're so worried about making your own house strong, you're not going to participate in building the choma around the city and building the wall around the city. Obviously, that's the first line of defense. And you're endangering yourself with this. So sometimes when we focus on ourselves, we don't realize that by focusing on what we need and not what protects the entire community, we will be oftentimes much safer if we are protected in the context of that larger picture than if we just have the little things that we need. So how to apply it, you could all think of your own applications. This is just some ideas that feel a bit deeper. Now, let's continue to the next point. Let's actually get to a little bit of the history of... Any questions in terms of what we said about Tefillah B'Tzibur? More questions when we talk about halacha than when we talk about not halacha. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about history. When was the Shemona Esrei written? By Yitzchak Avinu? Avram or Yitzchak or Yaakov? No? So when was it written? How old is it? I'll give you three options, okay? What? Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. So when did they live? I'll give you three options. Sometime during Bayis Rishon, sometime during Bayis Sheni, or shortly after Churban Bayis Sheni. Just because it sounds better, right? I don't know why I say it like that. I'm an experienced teacher. I do this all the time. No. What? Sorry? During the very, very beginning of Bayis Sheni. What happened was the following. We were in Bayis Rishon, and Bayis Rishon life was great. We were in Vitumim, we had Nevuah, we had Shechina, we had Nisim, that the Gemara speaks about, a Nes that happened every day in the Korban, whatever that did, as they did the Korban. Hashem was evident, it was clear, all the Tanis that you read about in Pirkei Avos that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, that was Bayis Rishon. Life is fabulous. We go into Golos for 70 years. In those 70 years, that was when Purim happened, that's when life, that was our first, Golos after being in the Beis HaMikdash for 400 years. The first Beis HaMikdash was about 420 years, I don't remember, it was 410, 420, 400 some odd years was the first Beis HaMikdash. Prior to that, we had, all the Shoftim, we were living in Eretz Yisrael for 900 years. Before Churban Beis HaMikdash, Rishon. We get thrown out, we go to Bavel. We're in Bavel for 70 years. While we're in Bavel, life is a little bit tough. David HaMelech writes a song made famous by, I forget who, on the rivers of Babylon. Who wrote that? Come on. You know. You don't know? On the rivers of Babylon? Who plays on the rivers of Babylon? No pop culture here? Okay.
Sorry.
What? Sorry. Not David HaMelech. You don't have who wrote that song? Who plays it? I'll find it for me. Okay, so David HaMelech writes the original Al Haraz Bavel, and what does he write? Al Haraz Bavel, Sham Yashavnu V'gam Bechinu V'zachinu Es Tzion. And he asks, Eich Nashir Es Shir Hashem Ad Mas Nichar? How could I sing Shir Hashem on a foreign land? What did he mean? I don't know. But what might he have meant is that until now we had this avoda, we had the Beis Hamikdash, we knew exactly how to serve Hashem. And now we find myself al admas nechar in a foreign place in Bavel. I don't really know how to serve Hashem. I don't really know what to do. That might have been the beginnings of more of a focus on starting tefillos, starting putting together tefillos. I don't know if really that's what had happened when we went to Bavel, but certainly right as we came back from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael for the second Beis HaMikdash, that was the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, who lived for a while, but the Gemara says clearly, this is a Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, did you find it? I have to get 4G. It is 4G, I have 5G, we have to wait. Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan says, Megillah Yud Zayin, that Tefillah of Shmona Esri was composed by 120 Zakenim who comprised Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, like you said, and the next three words are the most significant. Uvahem, and among those 120, Kama Nevi'im, a number of Nevi'im, participated in composing the text of Shmona Esrei. And they composed the text of Tikkun Shmona Esrei Brachos, the 18 brachas that we are familiar with. Maybe there are some textual variances between what we say and what they say, but basically, Shmona Esrei Brachos composed at that time period when, around the time, we returned to Eretz Yisrael for the beginning of Bayis Sheni.
Thomas Patton,
I guess it's not so pop anymore. Okay, it used to be, I guess, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago. Okay. Why is it significant that it was Uvahem Kama Nevi'im, that there were Nevi'im who were involved in the composition of Anshei Knesset, in the composition of Shmona Esrei? Because that makes our Shmona Esrei an entirely different thing. If you're a Navi, so you sort of know how Hashem works. If you're a Navi, you know how Hashem Kivyachol thinks. Kivyachol, you're a little more connected than otherwise. They wrote the Shmona Esrei with that little bit of Nevuah. And that's why it's important to realize the historical context, because we didn't have Nevuah in the second Beis HaMikdash. These were the leftover remnants of Nevuah from either the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, a little bit of Nevuah in the, you know, that people are still Nevi'im in Bavel. And this is the very, very last bit of Nevuah that existed in history. That was the time period when the Siddur, the Shmona Esrei Brachos, were composed. And what's also even more significant in realizing that the text that we write, that we say, was written by Nevi'im, or by a body that had Nevi'im among them in, as the editorial staff. Why is that important to realize? Because these tefillos, the tefillah Shmona Esrei, was written in a way that can effect stuff in Shamayim most effectively. In other words, you might come across a certain Jewish denomination who chooses, or denominations who choose, to play with the text of Shmona Esrei. They make it more contemporary, they make it more PC, they make it more whatever it is that suits the appropriate culture of the day. Maybe it's good. Maybe it is better. But I'll tell you one thing that they don't have, and that's Nevuah. The effectiveness, the efficacy of the tefillah, they don't. You know, if Shmona Esrei was written by Nevi'im, by some of them were Nevi'im at least, on the editorial board were Nevi'im, that means that they were Nevi'im, that they knew how to say what to say to get whatever we need from Hashem in the most effective way. That helps us realize a little bit about the potency and the strength of the words of Shmona Esrei, and how careful we have to be with not tampering with those words. Now this has nothing to do with Mishaberech for this, Mishaberech for Tzal or for Eretz Yisrael, the Medina, nothing to do with that. That's not Shmona Esrei. You could add Mishaberechs, you could create Mishaberechs. Throughout history, we've seen that the Gedolim, throughout significant moments of history, created Mishaberechs. Avraham was written during the Crusades. I'm talking just about Shmona Esrei. That's the part that tampering is not just, you know, uneducated. It's foolish, because why would you, if you have something designed by the world's top designer of whatever, why would you ask a person in architectural school to, you know, to adjust the design when it was designed by the best architect, you know, in the world? So tampering with Shmoneh Esrei is exactly that. Okay, I want to finish with just another point or two. We have 18 brachos, and of course you know that 18 became 19 during the, for whatever reason they had to add v'lamal shinim because of some political reasons that maybe we'll talk about in a shira or two. Each of the brachos of Shmoneh Esrei comes after the one before, of course. For your seventh avos, then you have Mechayim Esim, then you have Atah Kadosh, then you have Atah Chonein. The Gemara, I'm not going to go through the list because the Gemara goes through, it's an 18-step Gemara. I'm not going to stand here saying all 18 lines because it's just going to be boring. The Gemara says we have to say this bracha. Right after that, we want to say the next bracha. Right after this, we want to say the next bracha. The Gemara brings a rationale to explain how each bracha flows and progresses and evolves into the following bracha. We're not going to go into the, if anybody wants to look it up, it's in Megillah Daf Yud Zayin. We're not going to go into all the reasons why every bracha has to come after the next one, but I'll just say that when we hopefully talk in a week or two, the easiest place to realize it is towards the end of Shemona, to the end of the middle of Shemona Esrei. When we get to Mekabeis Nitchei Amo Yisrael, so we ask Hashem to gather us all in. What happens after we're all gathered in? Well, the next step is, once we're all gathered in, so Hashem could appropriately punish the Rishayim. That's Hashiva Shavtena Kavri Shana. And once we take care of the, we have the judges who could take care of the bad people, we will destroy all the Malshina and will be gone. That takes care of the Malshina. And once the Malshina will be gone, so the, all the bad guys are gone. So who it will be raised up? All the Tzaddikim. Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. Raise up the Keren, the pride of salvation. After that happens, then we're going to have Yerushalayim. After Yerushalayim, what's going to happen? We'll be able to daven. How will we be able to daven? What does davening have to do with Beis HaMikdash? Having Yerushalayim, having the Beis HaMikdash, enables us to daven. Where do we see that? Where do we see that having the Beis HaMikdash enables us to daven better? Okay, that's what I was hoping someone would say. But it's even before he came to my share tonight. Na 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 na. Somebody has heard that tune, right? You've heard that tune? There's another tune also. Na 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 na. Vahaviyosim al haikotshi. I'll bring you to Yerushalayim. V'sim aftim b'veis tefilasi. Based tefillah. So, Bonei Yerushalayim, based on this puzzle, what comes after that? Tefillah, Shema Kaleinu. After you have tefillah, what comes next? Then we have, what's the end of the pasuk? After that is the high part. What is that talking about? That's talking about bringing the carbon. They should be l'ratzon, that Hashem should accept them. Ritzei. And then basically we get to the end. Okay, without going through all the details, it's important to realize that not only did the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, Umehem Kama Neviim, write the text, but they also designed the format and the order for the 18 brachos. And we're going to finish with the following point. It seems, what I told you is that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola were metakein Shmoneh Esrei. The problem is that there's another braita that says that somebody named Shimon Pekuli. Why was he called Pekuli? I don't expect anyone to know. Rashi says because he worked with selling cotton. Cotton is pekula. What do they call when you buy linen? That's percale? Some word that sounds a little bit like this regarding cotton sheets. Maybe it's percale, maybe it's a little different. Okay. Anyway, Shunha Pekuli was the one who organized the Shmona Esrei Brachos. I thought we just said a minute ago that Anshei Knesset Gedola, who mehem kamen aviyim, so significantly, who mehem kamen aviyim, wrote the Shmona Esrei Brachos. What's this Shimon HaPekuli? So the Gemara asks this question, what do you mean Shimon HaPekuli set it up if we knew that the Anshei Knesset Gedola established the Shmona Esrei? So the Gemara says a very mysterious phrase. The Gemara says, oh yeah, the Anshei Knesset Gedola wrote it, and then it was forgotten. And Shimon HaPekuli came around at some time in history, 100, 200 years later, and he re-educated the way it was supposed to be. Can I ask you a very simple question? If all the Jewish people are davening Shmona Esrei every day, then how do you just forget? I understand that a person can forget. A person can forget a line, a person can forget a bracha, maybe a person can forget all Shmona Esrei. But how can Shmona Esrei be forgotten? So it's not my question. The Mefarshim point out that, of course, it doesn't mean that it was forgotten. There's a sefer called Otzer HaTfilos, a siddur called Otzer HaTfilos, which has, it's a siddur, and on the bottom there are different perushim of tefillah. And there's a perush called Tikkun Tefillah, and Tikkun Tefillah explains that what it means that we forgot Shemona Esrei. It doesn't mean we forgot Shemona Esrei. God forbid. It's absurd. It's absurd to even assume that we forgot. What it means is that originally, when the Anshei Knesset Gedola set up the Shemona Esrei, they didn't necessarily set it up in the order that we're familiar with. Even in the order that I just described to you, how one thing leads to the next. They set up 18 brachas. And 18 brachas said, here are 18 brachas. You know, enjoy them. And do whatever you need to do. Sometimes you feel a little bit like you have a headache, so you start with Refeinu. Other days you're having a hard time in the business, so you start with Baruch Aleinu. Other days you feel, you know, Tisha B'Av time, so you start with Bnei Yerushalayim. You had got a good grade on your finals, so you say, you know, you start with Modim. That's how it was. Until a certain point. Until Shimon HaPekuli. Shimon HaPekuli lived around 40 years before the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And he realized what was happening politically. He saw the impending Korban HaBayis. What's going to happen after Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed? We're going to go to Galus. We'll be separated. What happens when you have a sort of fluid, unofficial, you know, there are 18 things to say, do it however you want. Once things are fluid and do it however you want, and then you go to Galus, that's dangerous. So at that point in history specifically, when he sort of sensed the impending Churban and Beis HaMikdash, he realized, I better put things in a set order that will not be tampered with, that will be strong, will be able to carry us through the Golos, even if we are, you know, distracted religiously, we'll still be able to keep our Seder, we'll still be able to keep tefillah strong, because there will be one way that all over the world, so now you go to France, you go to Turkey, you go to Israel, you go to, you know, any place you might go, you'll always see the same exact Shmona Esrei anywhere and everywhere. And that's why Shimon HaPekuli specifically made sure that there would be a set Seder, a set organization and structure to the brachos that Anshei Knesset Gedola previously had just set down in terms of their content, but not in terms of their order. So Bezat Hashem, next week we're going to start actually going through, next week we'll start going through the Shmona Esrei itself. We'll start with Avos and go through, I don't know if we'll do every bracha, but we'll try to spend about 5 minutes or so on each bracha, and that should hopefully cover a good part of Shmona Esrei. Laila Tov.